Resonance Rewind with Robin Pierce, Jessica Burtis, Jenny Bill, and every so often some delightful guests from the cosmos.
Be kind. Resonance Rewind.
Questions to be asked. Is there a sanctuary? Are androids really more efficient than machines? And if we do actually activate our memory chips, will we actually see what we want to see? Is life, in fact, all an illusion? Just some of the questions we'll be talking about in this week's Resonance Rewind, focusing, of course, on Logan's Run. Whilst we actually follow through with Logan's Run, we welcome to Resonance Rewind, focusing on episode 2 of the very short-lived series of the 70s, Logan's Run, The Collectors. We're delighted to welcome our genuine Jessica, not the Heather Menzies incarnation, or indeed the incarnation of the Jenny Agutter version. It's Jessica Burtis from the United States of America, which now, of course, Jessica has a new president. How are you, Jessica?
I am doing pretty well. It's been a busy day. I was just downstairs watching all the inauguration coverage. So it's a very, very interesting day.
Well, absolutely. And also from Norway, again, doing all manner of marvellous things and ready, I'm sure, to actually pass lots of wonderful comments on The Collectors. We've got Jenny Bill. How are you, Jenny?
I'm fine, thank you. Good afternoon.
Excellent. There's also a connection, of course, with the Geordies in this particular episode, but we'll come to that later, because Robin Pierce has joined us. He's managed to get through to the right sort of segment of this with, of course, the American presidential inauguration going on in the background here for Time Jumpers. It just shows he's in his own virtual time machine. How are you, Robin Pierce?
Hello there. Yeah, I was late to the party. At least it wasn't the Boston Tea Party.
Let's progress to your thoughts and summary of this Alexander Singer-directed episode of Logan's Run, the TV series.
Logan's Run. It was produced in the mid to late 70s, an outshoot of the feature film. Basically, they kind of reimagined the feature film as an ongoing series. It became one of those chase series, I suppose. You know, like we had The Fugitive in the 60s, we had Planet of the Apes, where you are on the run because basically you are put to death when you reach a certain age. And some of us on
21 in the original books, 21 in the original book by William F. Nolan, 30 mm-hmm. in the motion picture, and I think they kept 30 in the television series because obviously Michael York, Jenny Agutter, or indeed Heather Menzies, or indeed Gregory Harrison couldn't necessarily play convincingly 20, 21-year-olds.
Well, I think that all that proves is that if that was actually happening right now, this would be Jessica's solo show. In this particular episode, which is the second episode of a very short-run series, it's called The Collectors, and our brave duo... who are being chased as runners because they have reached the age where they would enter the carousel and meet their maker. They're being pursued by the Sandmen, who are the police who carry out these executions and pursuits. Think they've actually come to Sanctuary, which is, you know, as the name suggests, a safe place. But all is not as it seems. It should be kind of borne in mind, I think, that this was only the second episode. They already think they found Sanctuary. Come on, guys. Sanctuary's just up the road, really?
It may well have been. It may be a place of mind. Let's turn to Jessica, because I trust, Jessica, you identified Angela Cartwright, Midweek Drivette, of course, in a role not in her Penny Robinson routine, but actually as Karen Four in this particular episode.
I thought that was such a cool character. It's so awesome getting to see that. I loved it.
So how did you find the episode as an entire?
I enjoyed it so much. I actually started looking into the book because I thought it was just, I'd never heard of this series before, so I was super interested in it. So I had a lot of fun with it. It was kind of, you know, a bit more lighthearted at certain parts and a bit more goofy. So I thought it was a very interesting new show.
Parrots, Paradise, and Sanctuary, Protector John, and of course Joanne, played of course by an actress, Leslie Parrish, who would marry Richard Bach, famous for writing the book Jonathan Livingston Seagull and Illusions, amongst other things. And maybe this was just an illusion. What say you, Jenny Bill?
Well, the film, I thought the film was great, and it was a great idea, it was a great film. The TV series, fabulous theme music. The series itself was 17 episodes too long. I thought it was terrible.
Well, as it only lasted 14, obviously there were three that was completely been lost there.
Too long. I thought it was awful. I thought the acting was terrible. It was corny. The costumes, I mean, those poor alien beings, which were just basically some people draped in black fabric, some other people in fabric with masks on. I just thought it was, and like Robin said, I mean, finding Sanctuary in the second episode was a bit, they obviously knew that this series was going to be short run, and so they thought they'd better get it in quick. Absolutely love it.
Well, you'll be pleased to know we'll be wrapping up with Jeff Love and his orchestra's version of Logan's Run, which is quite interesting on that line of things. Jessica, I get a feeling that Jenny's going to be going down the line of Teen Titans for this. It's interesting that Isaac Asimov, a very famous science fiction writer, actually claimed this was one of the better science fiction television series because at least it took science seriously, unlike a number of other sort of key things that were there. As far as the actors themselves were concerned, Heather Menzies, who I always thought was vastly underrated, and of course would marry Robert Urich, hence her name, Heather Menzies Urich, sadly passed away a few years ago. She didn't like the original movie at all and felt it wasn't really working on that basis. But overall, you've just said in terms of your impression, you seem to have kind of echoed some of the things that I thought at the time, that actually there were glitches, but it was ultimately quite a fun episode in terms of its own way and things and the way that things were actually operating from that point of view. Anything that struck you in terms of the way the narrative progressed, and of course the character of Donald Moffat, who portrays the android Rem?
Is that me or Jenny?
Sorry, Jessica.
I liked all the characters. I thought that Rem was a really funny one. He seemed like one of the few sensible characters to me. I think at one point you're talking about technology. I think it was funny at one point was it Ren? He was holding the little like scanner in the desert, and I thought he was holding like a perfume bottle for a second because that's what it looked like. So I didn't know what was going on.
Well, but if Dr. McCoy could use salt shakers in the 23rd century, then I'm sure that using perfume bottles also actually in the 23rd century would be quite useful. Science fiction writer and author Isaac Asimov has mentioned he was asked to appraise the science fiction lineup of 1977 and 78 for TV Guide magazine. And he said the following: when science fiction is bad, it's horrible. And he put Man from Atlantis and Jonathan Harris's Space Academy in that category. Also considering Wonder Woman hopeless, although Linda Carter was an example of terrific biology. But he liked Logan's Run and focused on the Collector's episode, where aliens captured creatures from other worlds and put them into a space-age Noah's Ark. Asimov appreciated how the alien captors were kept in cages with different atmospheric pressures. This was much more valid than the cantina bar scene in Star Wars, he said, when aliens from other worlds were perfectly at home in a single atmosphere, at a single temperature and pressure. In general, he called Logan's Run good science fiction. Take that, Jenny. Let's go back to Robin.
I can't believe that somebody as respected in the field as Isaac Asimov would find anything good to say about this reprehensible waste of 50 minutes. They took a perfectly good motion picture. They made a lightweight, and that's being kind, series about it. And the Collector's episode, I could find, honestly, I'm not trying to be big, controversial or clever here. I could find nothing to enjoy about it. Nothing. There was no redeeming quality there. I found it to be a dire rewrite of both the Menagerie from Star Trek, or The Cage, depending which version you want to look at, and The Keeper two-parter from Lost in Space. I found the performances were just awful. I mean, Heather Menzies, if you didn't like the series, love, you know, the film, just keep away from the series, because you added absolutely nothing with your perfect Farrah Fawcett flicked back hair when you're supposed to be on the run. And if you're going to be on the run, really, try and cover yourself up just a little bit. I found Gregory Harrison to be, basically, he had the appeal of the little cardboard roll that holds a kitchen roll up, and just about the same acting ability. Donald Moffat, very interesting. Early Data. Brent Spiner probably took his entire performance and put it into Data for Star Trek The Next Generation as an annoying, sort of, yet likable android. But Donald Mock, he just wasn't getting any material really to work with other than being somewhat pompous. It didn't work for me on any level. Their hovercraft vehicle was just too obviously a car with its wheels covered up. I mean, come on, I know it was 1977, but, you know, 1978 saw us with Buck Rogers in the 25th century in Battlestar Galactica, and it was all so much better. I mean, those kind of technological leaps in TV narrative surely cannot have taken place in 12 months. It was just lazy television.
In terms of, again, another critic at the time from Broadcast magazine, Julia Inman, she was surprised that the plot of Logan's Run actually enticed her. It was fairly ingenious, and the special effects are creatively imaginative. She was also amused by Rem, and one of the few things that she liked about the series was its bit of philosophy, which also kind of echoed in Logan's Run. We haven't, of course, mentioned that one of the key persons in terms of the scripts for this series was DC Fontana. Dorothy Fontana, of course, very much at the heart of Star Trek, and putting that whole process into play. There, we mentioned Angela Cartwright. I mentioned, obviously, Leslie Parrish, who would appear actually in an episode of Star Trek, or did he appear actually in an episode of Star Trek. Jessica, it seems to be the two of us against the world in this particular one. Let's come to your good self in terms of what other things amused you about this particular episode. I mean, in terms of the questions that were actually there. I mean, some of the quotes that I thought were quite interesting. Nothing's impossible in this place. Our orders were to bring back no more than two specimens of the dominant species from any planet. What did you like about it? Because again, you know, obviously Jenny and Robin are kind of curmudgeonly to the point of extremists here. They've become the kind of ancient folk who basically should be retired immediately. Jessica, let's go back to yourself.
Well, I think I had never seen the other episodes or the movie, so I think my view of the series would be different. I wonder now how like I would view this episode if I had seen more of the series or the movie. But I just thought the aliens were pretty funny when how they were talking with Rem about people. They were, you know, saying like, oh, they're so, humans are just emotional. And I just thought that was kind of funny. And I just kind of liked the visuals of the desert. And I thought that the city was very pretty with parrots. I thought that was very interesting. I think it's just very unique to kind of see someone in the background with like a parrot on their shoulder, kind of like this false idyllic world.
Parrots can improve everything, let's face it. I mean, you can put more parrots and things, it'll get improvement. And of course, there is a relevance there to the whole notion of humans as being pets. Sometimes they let their emotions dictate their actions. And we saw this, of course, with the character of Martin, who clearly was a childhood friend of Jessica's, who generally sort of, I think, is there to not only prove that you can just imagine somebody immediately and they'll appear, or maybe to sort of echo the whole, the semblings, as we say, of a bit of a romance between Logan and Jessica in terms of where things are going. And indeed, as Ivan Goff and Ben Roberts were actually saying, looking to develop the series from there. So Jenny, I take it you're basically, you cannot be convinced on this one. You really, anything that you can, I mean, other than the music, anything that you thought, actually, let's use this as a takeaway. I mean, surely the line about expanding the empire of Cthulhu, which I think was originally pronounced Cassola, but then became Cassola after Cthulhu, and the whole notion of Cthulhu and Cassola and that sort of spaceships. And I mean, I had to watch it several times because first time I watched it, I thought this is terrible. But second or third time round, actually, it begins to grow on one. Jenny, what about yourself?
Maybe I need to watch it another few more times. Is that what you're saying?
Activate that memory pulse. Activate that memory pulse, and things will manifest.
Because it's a sci-fi, and I kind of liked it, but I was watching it, and I kind of started enjoying it. I mean, I have seen them before, and then the more it went on, the more I thought, God, this is really rubbish, and the acting is terrible, and the costumes, and oh, that's stupid, and you know. And then I started thinking that some of the ideas about just thinking of something and it's just stupid. And I just started to get more and more like despondent with it. And by the time it finished, I was like, well, what was that all about? It was a complete, why did they bother even with that series after what I thought was a really great film? And I thought it gives the film a bad name because you associate the series with the film. And I think the film was quite a classy film, and it had, you know, it was a good film. It had good acting. It had well-known people in it.
Well, we will be considering it later in 2021, all being well. But again, returning briefly now to Robin, in terms of the sort of sequence, as you said, this was one of what I refer to as the holy or possibly unholy trilogy of 14 episode standing shows, which effectively had the chase theme, as you say, or the fugitive sort of motto. The first one was Fantastic Voyage, Fantastic Journey, I should say. And then, of course, we follow that up with the delights of, Planet of the Apes. In fact, Planet of the Apes was the first, then Fantastic Voyage. And then, of course, we have Logan's Run. It didn't do at all well in the ratings, which was one of the reasons why it was cancelled after 14 shows. The last three shows, of course, we were fortunate enough to see in Britain before the United States, because in the United States, Jessica, you only got to see 11 of them, because the last three basically were held back until the DVD was released in the 21st century, which is quite interesting. So, and I'd also have to say that this is probably not the strongest episode of Logan's Run. There are others that are better, and in each one of the episodes, there is a sense, I feel, that there are really some really interesting concepts that are almost coming out, and then something will happen which almost tends to take away and distract from that. And to answer Robin's question, look, Jessica had been in the City of Domes in a life of luxury for all this time. Why would she actually change her sort of system at all? And those dresses, of course, they might have caused problems with the censors, but at the end of the day, the kids weren't interested in the dresses. They were more interested in the technology, like the hover car that wasn't.
Right.
I just feel... I was around watching sci-fi when this was first shown, and it was shown on Saturday nights, as I recall, around the time that the BBC was showing Doctor Who. So I would have been about 17 or 18, and I liked the film. I had seen the film in the cinema, and it was during that sort of fallow period for sci-fi, where the only sci-fi movies that we ever saw were Earthbound, because things like 2001 and Silent Running hadn't done that well at the box office. So we had things like Soylent Green, we had Rollerball, we had Logan's Run. It was all sort of Earthbound. But this series, I mean, even as a sci-fi fan in my teens back then, just at the very start of, you know, Starburst magazine starting, and they covered it, it just couldn't pique my interest at all. And that was unusual for the time.
You mean the wanton destruction that Logan and Jessica engage in when they find they have the power of telekinesis, and that thought pulse enables them to actually completely trash a room, like many a rock star would just trash their hotel suites, etc. Did that not sort of say what a sad reflection on humanity and the capitalist consumerist culture?
I thought that the saddest reflection on humanity was that there was a bunch of people who would sit down and actually produce this.
I happen to have the sensory equipment sophisticated enough to tell the difference between illusion and reality. That was something that kind of jarred with me slightly, Jessica. I'm not sure about yourself, but why was it that Rem effectively managed to see the difference? Surely when he first sees the rocks on the other side of the hell, they are just rocks. So it's interesting that when the fake Jessica and fake Logan obviously were there, they would also surely have been just an illusion, so I wasn't sure how he could quite see them. But that was an interesting sort of slight sort of concern that I actually had in terms of the system. But how did you feel about, again, the main villains of the piece, those two aliens who, of course, end up not in the guise of Leslie Parrish or indeed Lyndon Childs, but end up as those strangely suffocated life forms who effectively are sort of left there in with beings whose atmosphere they couldn't breathe? How did you feel they made out?
I actually liked the villains. I think they were kind of like not bumbling, but they certainly were oblivious to a lot. They weren't the most intelligent supervillains. But I think the whole idea of creating a little false world to trap people in, based on what the people desire and want, was a very interesting take. I haven't seen it before. I'm guessing it's probably been done, but I have never seen something like that. So I enjoyed, I actually liked the two aliens. I liked their costumes just because I like anything sparkly. So I really just liked that.
So, and this is the whole point, you see. It's the 70s. It's the height of the disco era. Why can't we have sparkly science fiction concepts and costumes, etc.? If it's all like The Expanse, it's very, very miserable.
Exactly. I had fun with them. I thought they were very calm. They were just, they weren't the typical villains, I guess I see. They just seemed super chill about everything.
There was a slight kind of notion in terms of obviously the use of no offense between Logan and Rem, where he basically says he has the capability of actually sifting between reality and illusion. Humans, of course, don't have that ability. No offense. Did you feel that was sort of, again, a useful comment on using the alien, or in this case, the android as other? Because, of course, in the series, in the movie, as we'll see when we look at it later on in the Resonance Rewind series, it's Peter Ustinov who plays the old man. And again, he's a kind of elderly gentleman, and we get a sense he's always a life form in general. But did you feel that, say, that line of an early incarnation of the robot or the android as other kind of said anything, or was it just a case of, well, it was fun?
I didn't see it as much. I think that he was kind of shown as like this character that kind of knew what was going on compared to everybody else. I think the two main characters, I think Logan and Jessica were a bit, I think they were about as oblivious as the aliens. I just perceived them all as kind of not knowing what was going on ever. But I think that he was kind of like, instead of seeing him as an other, I guess I just saw him as like a little like a guardian angel almost, because he was the only one that had like a sense of what was happening towards the end. But yeah, I don't know how it was in the rest of the series.
And let's face it, had it not been for Rem, they probably would have left the planet. They would have been taken off there. They would have been held up as the best the 22nd, 23rd century had to offer from the planet Earth, because the aliens would have actually gone back to their home. All would have been well. And the Empire of Cthulhu, or Cassola, would have actually kind of continued to expand. I think we need a sequel.
Can I just add to that, Alex? I remember when I first watched the Logan's Run series back in the day, I saw the Donald Moffat character as basically the Spock stand-in. He was the logical one, but he would present his logic with a little twinkle of the eye kind of thing, as Leonard Nimoy, of course, did. So I think that was his purpose, was that the two Earthlings, if you like, would get themselves into trouble and not see the wood for the trees. But Rem, as Spock did before him, would be the one that says, "My eyes say there is something there. My senses say there isn't, Captain." And that was his purpose. But it's interesting that when I first saw it, I saw Spock. But when I saw it this time, of course, I saw Brent Spiner as Data, even down to the mannerisms.
It's seeing different things from different times. And as we said, the DC Fontana connection presumably would have endorsed that in terms of the show itself. Okay, finally, in terms of the actual overall systems, I must admit, Donald Moffat, British actor, of course, who was a lumberjack for a time before he actually took up acting. I spent 6 months actually working as a lumberjack person. But of course, keeping that Geordie connection, what's not to love about a series that doesn't actually sort of end with that classic Newcastle upon Tyne Geordie saying, "All right, pet," in terms of the wrap up from Rem, with of course his pets and how he actually sees Logan and Jessica. Again, a wondrous thing. And also, hats off to the number of dry ice systems that were actually put into place for that, and of course the curious blue, pink, and indeed orange and green wallpaper design, or indeed wall design, of those very large corridors on the spaceship. I suspect Jenny will probably not have a high score for this, so we'll go to Robin first. What's your score, Robin? Out of 10.
Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. I can't go any higher than 2.
Well, I was thinking about a 7, but because of that, because I'm offsetting it, I'm going to go 7.5. I'll go 7.5 from that point of view. Jessica, what are you going to go for?
I actually have the same score. I was thinking 7.5. I have to add that half for all the parrots. I enjoyed that a lot, so that's my score.
I think you're quite right. The extra 0.5 for the parrots is superb. Robin is indeed waving his pentadactyle digit at the camera there. His index finger is being woven there, as human beings are wont to do. Obviously, hasn't had the memory activator gone as yet. Jenny Bill, is this going to be in the category of Teen Titans Go for you?
Nothing will be in the category of Teen Titans Go. I'm so sorry. I would just like to mention, Jessica, that there is a Star Trek episode from the original series, but I can't remember what it's called, where they do actually go on a planet and everything that they think and desire comes true.
Shore Leave.
Because I actually felt that there was a number of similarities in this episode to a couple of Star Trek episodes, which Robin has also mentioned. Anyway, because I love the theme music so much, I'm going to give it 4.
And I will actually hold up the full graphic narrative of that combination factor of Logan's Run and Battlestar Galactica, with Logan, played by Gregory Harrison, of course, still with us, thankfully, and Heather Menzies sadly passed away in that whole system. And clearly, so we also had to, Jessica, give it a 0.5 extra because of Angela Cartwright's line as Karen Four, because surely she had more to do in that episode than many episodes of the whole 3 years of her time in Lost Space. She's one of these Space Family Robinson sort of folks. So it's a step up for Angela Cartwright on that basis. Next week, of course, we actually return, not to tomorrow. We go back on board the Starship Enterprise, because that's why we're aboard her. Quite clearly, quite simply, more androids, Jessica, more android forms, more definitions about what it is to be human and so on. So more question marks on that. And it's nice to see in Donald Moffat, we can at least prove that as far as the character of Rem is concerned, we have somebody called Donald who could actually be a nice individual, as opposed to what you've recently actually had to cope with within the United States of America. I'm not mentioning any names because obviously it's not appropriate to do so. So there we are. That's pretty much it for the moment though. Jessica is off for another online session. Jenny, we salute you. Robin, take care. Keep on resonating.
Choo!